This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 14th of June. Welcome to your nightly news and current affair program, The Informer. I'm your host, Alana Schetzer.
I'm Matthew Wade. On tonight's show, we'll pop into the Journo's Corner to dissect the week's big news and how the media covered them. And later in the show, the Chicks Talking Footy team will bring us the latest AFL news.
But first, we're going to find out how refugees in Australia are taking control of how their stories are told. Stories of Hope is an exhibition being put on by advocacy organisation Road to Refuge. It opens on June 20 at Federation Square. The exhibition has been crafted entirely by people from Australia's refugee community on how they wish to be seen.
Renee Dixon created the exhibition as an autobiographical reflection of her journey with her partner Tina, seeking safety in Australia. Tina and Renee spoke to Shannon Power about their experience as a queer couple coming to Australia after fleeing their home country.
Tina and Renee, welcome to The Informer. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, you've come to Australia, you're a couple, you sought asylum here. Can you tell us a little bit about your story and how you got to be in Australia?
Thanks so much for inviting us to speak today. So the question where we come from is a bit tricky for us. So I guess I'll let Renee just start answering that.
You know, I'm sorry, but I can't give you an answer because when we were granted protection here, we were agreed not to disclose our country of origin. It has to do with voluntarily disclosure and not needing protection anymore. And it's also putting in danger anyone else who is still there. So like our families, colleagues, friends.
Yeah, and I think you raise a really interesting point because maybe not a lot of people know that not everyone can talk about where they come from and some people don't want to talk about it. So can you give any advice to people who might meet an asylum seeker or a refugee about what is the best way to approach them and ask, you know, is it always appropriate or can people always ask where someone's from or is it better to just leave it, do you think?
I think it differs on context. So, for example, for us being queer, it's very different because unlike people who are fleeing armed conflicts and they may be still longing for their homes, our home has actually exiled us and banished us. So that question for me serves more as a trigger, as a reminder of the actual story. But also, I guess, more broadly, when we live in such a multicultural society, it becomes a little bit irrelevant as well to ask the question. So we'll be actually speaking more about this at one of our home workshops during the exhibition. But there are different alternatives to that. Things like, what's your cultural heritage or how many languages you speak or in which countries have you lived? Because that is a less, I guess, intrusive question. And so people, if they want, they will disclose. But at this instance, we do not risk to actually trigger some traumatic memories that people don't even want to tell.
I think that's really good advice. And the exhibition that you're a part of called Stories About Hope actually hopes to, you know, change this discussion around asylum seekers and putting the discussion more, I guess, away from the negative into talking about hope. Can you tell us why that's important?
You know, since the beginning in Australia, I felt that people seeking asylum were portrayed through the lens of victimhood. There was no agency attached to them. Yes, it's important to be realistic about the cause, but it's even more important to portray people you serve as a dignified humans. To speak more broadly, yes, we're victims of crime of the modern world, where violence is still used, but we're survivors as well. Being a survivor does not mean that I don't need access to justice or services or legal assistance. So for me, my main goal was to portray people with complex experiences who was not reduced to one label. It's also important that we wouldn't give up and but continue working together to make changes in our society.
If I also may add, I guess for us, the hope was also starting with the language that we were using about people. So I feel like when we speak about people who come to our shores, you know, seeking safety, and we speak about them as asylum seekers and refugees, we essentially are labeling them to one temporal experience in their life, but that experience overtakes their whole agency and identity. So when we speak about, if we use words like asylum seekers and refugees, we are basically labeling people to one experience of their life that essentially overtakes their whole identity. And so it's very hard then to speak about any justice or to do any work if we only see labels in front of us and not people. So our approach with the project was that we are talking about people for whom the experience of seeking asylum was part of their experiences, but that's not all who they are. And I think in this sense, we are having this hope that the whole, like, if the conversation in Australia will shift, there'll be more opportunities to actually do a lot of successful advocacy.
On the opening night of the Stories About Hope exhibition, the both of you are giving a guided tour, which kind of sounds cool. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect at the Federation Square event.
First of all, you can see us. We're pretty cute.
Awesome.
But on a more serious note, so the exhibition will run for a week. The opening night will have a guided tour where we will share a little bit more ideas about how we created the project, what was the driving force behind it. We'll talk a little bit more about people's stories. There are different types of photographs in the project. Some are black and white, some are color, so they have particular metaphors, so we'll explain that. Together with the exhibition, there will be videos played on big screens on the Federation Square, so people can just, you know, walk past and watch them. We're also introducing several workshops during the week, so there'll be one where we'll be exploring ideas of hope, of home and belonging. We'll have to do a lot with these questions about where you're from or tell me your story and all the acts attached to that. And another workshop will be on how we can effectively help people seeking asylum and how can we effectively advocate. So a lot of that, all of that information is available at storiesabouthope.com.au. You need to book to attend those workshops, but they will, we hope that they will spark a lot of good conversation.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We'd love to hear from you about any of tonight's topics, so make sure you send us an SMS on 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au or tweet us at The Informer Joy.
It's now time for our weekly segment, Journo's Corner. First up, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews has announced the state government's plan to boost funding for LGBTI mental health services by distributing $500,000 among various support groups and services. The government has said this funding has been planned in response to the still looming same-sex marriage plebiscite, which was allocated a whopping $170 million in the federal budget, despite being voted down by the Senate last year. Now, Matt, this isn't actually new funding, is it?
Well, not that I'm aware of. And I know back when plebiscite, the, you know, hypothetical same-sex marriage plebiscite was actually on the table, the Daniel Andrews government kind of said they would commit $500,000 to funding these kind of services in the event that it was to go ahead. So I think they already kind of had that in their back pocket as potential funding. But yeah, it seems like they've now, you know, they're going to utilize it. It just seems a bit strange, I guess, in my mind a little bit, just because the plebiscite is as far as I'm aware, was kind of shut down in the Senate. So despite the fact that Malcolm Turnbull obviously set aside money for it in the budget, by all means, it's likely still not going to go ahead.
It just seems really odd timing because, yes, it was mentioned in the federal budget. That is 6 weeks ago. Now, there hasn't really been any talk about it since. So it just seems very odd timing that the government will come out and re-announce this funding. Like you said, we don't think it's new funding. Maybe this is in response to the government's had, you know, not great publicity recently. They've been hounded by some media over youth crime, terrorism. Do you think this is a bit of an opportunistic approach by our Premier?
A cynic in me wonders that. But I think that, because you see it manifest in many ways, not even with the Victorian government, just generally in politics. You know, when it comes time for, you know, World AIDS Day, when it comes time for Midsummer, when it comes to time for Pride March, you often find that politicians will announce things that are positive around the LGBTI community at those points because they know it will reflect quite well on them. So, yeah, I mean, the funding's amazing, don't get me wrong, but I, as far as I'm aware, that funding was already kind of committed to ages ago in the event of a plebiscite taking place. So I don't think it's necessarily new funding. And the fact that it has to do with, you know, this federal budget allocation makes me wonder whether that's really the point of it, because, you know, the plebiscite is likely not going to go ahead anyway. So, yeah, I wonder if it is a bit of opportunism.
And I wonder also if the government should sort of crack open this piggy bank, this $500,000, given that there are constant challenges and barriers faced by the community every day. The Margaret Court controversy, I hate to bring it up again, but yeah, that really illustrates the incredible, you know, vicious opposition still to the LGBTI community. I'm wondering whether the government should just spill the piggy bank and just get on with it and fund services.
That's what I mean. I mean, I understood back, you know, later last year why they kind of hypothetically committed to it if a plebiscite went ahead, because it would have been very damaging. But I think, you know, mental health issues, you know, permeate the queer community all the time. Like, it's not just, you know, in events of these. I mean, they might have a spike, but, you know, funding for mental health services are important year round. So, the funding is amazing. It's really, really great. I guess just the means or how it came about or why it's being implemented now is, I guess, a point of interest for me. But, in your opinion, I mean, things like this kind of funding, at the end of the day, I mean, do you see it as a positive step? I mean, in terms of, you know, helping to fund some much needed services, I guess, for LGBTI people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it obviously, money is money. It's incredibly important. It's incredibly needed. I'm not particularly impressed by governments, and all governments do this, both at state and federal level. Often, when they need a boost, will re-announce funding, and they'll do it in a way that makes it appear as if it's new money. And these are tricks. They're very hard to catch at times, and it is potentially misleading. You know, it's not $1 million, it's $500,000. And I think, you know, communities that need help, you know, I just think it's a bit mean to sort of dangle that carrot.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just to clarify, some of the people that will be receiving this part of this funding are services like Switchboard, so the LGBTI telephone counselling service, among others. But I think the funding will help by all means in a really positive way. I guess the announcement of it to tie in with this money that's been set aside in the federal budget, which was announced quite a while ago. It comes across, I guess, in some ways as opportunistic. Like you said, it shouldn't be something that's kind of dangled out, you know, when there's a particular event on or something like this is happening. It's something that should kind of, you know, be happening just because it's a serious issue in the community. I guess we'll see what happens with that. But I'd like to see this kind of stuff happen, not just during events like the plebiscite or like Midsummer or like World AIDS Day.
Absolutely. Moving on to something a bit lighter. It's Pride Month in many parts of the world, and this year the month has found itself a very unlikely icon. I'm going to try to pronounce this correctly. The Babadook, monster from the 2014 Australian horror film. The film somehow made its way onto Netflix LGBT movies listing recently, and as soon as people picked up on it, they kind of just rolled with it and adopted this bizarre creature as some sort of mascot. People have been dressing up as the creature for Pride. Countless memes have been created, including a mock RuPaul's Drag Race workroom entrance and a Human Rights Award speech. What do you think is the Babadook, our new LGBTI mascot?
I'll be honest, I'm actually living for it because I'm a horror movie fan and I actually watched the Babadook like when it came out back in 2014, and it is not LGBTI in the slightest. You know, it's obviously it's a horror movie about a mum and her son. You probably could read very deeply into some sort of queer subtext, but it's not a queer movie by any respect. But I just love how with internet culture and LGBTI fans, they've kind of managed to turn it into this. Like just looking at photos from Pride events happening at the moment, you know, people are dressing up as this. I love it. I think it's hilarious. And yeah, it's awesome. I love it. What do you think?
It's so random. You're absolutely right. The internet culture has completely changed how these things come to be, and it's such a random thing as well. It is so not what you would think to be part of LGBTI. It is this, you know, wearing kind of like a Ned Kelly black outfit with this weird hat, and yeah, I mean, it looks like something that somebody would dress up for a really bad Halloween party. But I love the randomness of it, and if people, yeah, you know, find something in it, I think that's great.
And I think given, you know, around this time with Pride Month and Pride events, you know, there are a lot of like larger businesses and corporates who are obviously trying to show themselves as like being, you know, big allies and kind of put themselves in that space. And I kind of love that this has nothing to do with that. It's just a random fictional character that's kind of risen above all that and is like the queer icon of the month. So I think it's really, really awesome.
When I first saw it, the first thing I thought of was Slender Man, which is another internet
video game
creature.
Is it a video game?
I think it's some sort of internet
story.
Video? It's very creepy. Yeah. It has actually been associated with some kids were inspired by it
and
hurt some other kids. So it's very different, but, you know, it's the dark clothing and very mysterious. And I just think, you know, what next? What else can we adopt?
Well, I saw someone residing online earlier today and I thought it was hilarious. They're like, oh, well, you know, if they're going to do a Babadook sequel, rather than make it a horror movie, maybe it can kind of be, you know, about the mum and the son and the Babadook, you know, watching Golden Girls reruns and like gossiping over cheesecake. And I just love it. I just love how LGBTI people, you know, the internet kind of creates this online community, well, a global community, and people can kind of just band together and, you know, make pop culture happen. You know, with the Babadook, it's just so random. I know we keep using that word, but yeah, I'm down for it. I'm here for Babadook as our gay icon.
And can the villain in the sequel be Tony Abbott?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's an Australian movie. That's right. So, yeah, no, there's no reason. And that's the other interesting thing as well. I think the Babadook performed quite well generally as a film, but it is an Australian movie as well, but it's still somehow now it's gone global. So I imagine the creators of the film aren't complaining because it's probably just given more exposure to, you know, homegrown cinema.
This could be the secret to actually making the Australian film industry profitable. Just
tap into, you know,
tap into, like, you know, make your main character some sort of, you know, icon. Just very quickly, Skittles.
Yeah.
Normally you can taste the rainbow, but this month for Pride in the US, you can taste white and black. They've changed the color of the candy.
They're not colorful anymore.
No, they're all white and black.
That to me screams very like gimmicky. No offense, Skittles. I mean, I don't really eat them, but like, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think they look very appealing, like a lot of white Skittles.
They look like they've gone off. They look like they've been in someone's basement for about 1,000 years.
See, this is what I'm saying. When it comes to Pride Month, a lot of people try to do these gimmicky things like big brands or whatever to try to get on board with LGBTI people. And at the end of the day, all you need is a fictional horror villain to, you know, that's all we want. We don't want the Skittles. We don't want all that. We want, you know, I think, yeah.
And instead of, you know, making your normally delicious looking lollies white, just give some money to some services.
Yes, 100%. I think that's it for us for the wrap up of the news. Thank you, Solana. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9, a show bringing you the day's news from an LGBTI perspective. There's been a lot happening in the world of AFL this week. Here are Joy's own Chicks Talking Footy to bring you the latest AFL news.
You're with the girls from Chicks Talking Footy. I'm Fiona. I'm a Hawk.
Yeah, I'm Danae and I barrack for the Dockers.
And I'm Beck and I barrack for the top of the table, Adelaide Crows.
Mm. Mm. Just pop that in there, why don't you? did. So lots happening at the moment with Pride Games around Victoria and New South Wales. There's originally there was a Pride Game at Yarra Glen, which was a local football game. Jason Ball, who's fairly well known to our community, initiated that and was one of the first footballers at a local level to come out. And since then, the AFL has done a Pride Game where we celebrate inclusion during a football game, rainbow flags, rainbow Guernseys, all of that sort of thing. So it's a big celebration and a great day. And since then, there's now been Pride Games initiatives right round a lot of clubs, particularly in Victoria. What are some of the games that are coming up, Beck?
Well, this Saturday is the game a lot of us are heading to in Hamilton, which is a big Pride and Inclusion Day. So there's Melbourne University playing Darabin Falcons, which is the women's VFL.
Versus the Falcons.
The Falcs.
And how many AFLW players are present?
Approximately 30, which 30. Is huge.
You'd be paying not so big dollars because they let us in for free.
$50
Yes.
And so it's a quality game. It's going to be a ripping game.
Absolutely. It is. And then also that afternoon, the local team, the Hamilton Kangaroos, are playing South Warrnambool, and they'll all be wearing rainbow Guernseys, which is
brilliant.
Fabulous. And then on Sunday, the 30th of July, there's a Pride game in North Gippsland between Glengarry and Traugan Tyres.
Wow.
I know it's testing my pronunciation too. Also on Saturday, the 30th of August, the Southern Football Netball League has a game between St Kilda City and St Paul's.
Great.
And getting in early next year on the 10th of March in Daylesford, there'll be a game between Daylesford and Yarra Glen as an exhibition match during chill out. So there are Pride games coming out of our Pride games.
There's Pride games coming out of our rainbow orifices.
Mm. So a Pride game, Aussie Rules Football Pride game during chill out. I always suggested that either, well, I think that the Sydney Mardi Gras could be held at half time as the entertainment for the AFL Grand Final. Don't you think that would work?
Wow.
I like
that's
it.
That's a lot of planning going on right there.
You don't really like it.
No, I do.
And let's not forget the AFL Pride game that's coming up on July the 22nd between Sydney and St Kilda football clubs at the SCG.
Brilliant.
The Chicks Talking Footy team just coincidentally happened to be broadcasting during that game. So there's a lot going on.
Exciting times.
We love Pride and we love inclusion.
And we love footy.
LGBTIAFL is our motto. Hip and shoulder to homophobia.
Thanks, Pete.
Thanks. Good luck in round 13, everybody.
This is the Informer, Joy 94.9, nightly news and current affairs show. And that was Chicks Talking Footy. And you can catch them every Wednesday on Joy at 8 p.m. Now, not know if you noticed this, but Joy FM is currently in the midst of our radiothon, which I'm sure you've, if you haven't already given, please do. Joy FM is incredibly important. Last night we had our telethon, and Chris, our station manager and boss extraordinaire, was there and is here to tell us a little bit about it.
That is on my business card, actually, boss extraordinaire. So thank you for that, going by the official title. Yeah, so last night we had a telethon where what we did is we were ringing our lapsed members, so people who were once Joy members who have let their membership lapse for any number of reasons, and we had a dedicated team of about 10 of us on the phones ringing people and asking them, you know, to rejoin. We had a really good number of people rejoining, but one of the things we wanted to drive home was you might have got a text yesterday. So if you didn't answer your phone, you would have got a lovely little voicemail, someone saying, hey, this is blah blah from Joy and we want you to rejoin, we're sending you a text. So what that text is a link asking people, and it takes you back to an online renewal form, and it would be great if you clicked on that text, followed the link and rejoined, because Radiothon is still going. It's still going for another, it's still going to the 30th of June. We've got about $58,000 that we want to raise still. Our aim is $300,000, and I believe folks, I believe Joy Community that we can get there.
So we've already raised over, well, actually, what is it? 200 and my maths is really bad.
$240,000. $241,000 we've raised to date.
Yep.
And then the goal is 300. 300,000.
And we've got just over 2 weeks left, right?
Just over 2 weeks left. Every donation that comes in before June 30 goes into the draw to win a Holden Astra.
Ooh.
And member... No, no, sorry, that's wrong. Every membership that comes in before June 30 goes into the draw to win a Holden Astra. And every donation over $2 is tax deductible, and you go into the draw for a Caribbean cruise, if you don't mind.
And there's been plenty of celebrities as well that have kind of been popping into the station to kind of, you know, show their support as well. I mean, this week I think the Veronicas, Marsha Hines, you know, everyone's kind of getting on board. And because I think everyone realizes how important it is, you know, to keep community radio, particularly LGBTI community radio, you know, above air. So,
well, we're the only one in Australia, and we're one of only three in the world. So wow. It really is important to, we really are at the point where we want to take joy to the world. So it's not just about Melbourne anymore. It's not just about Victoria. It's not even just about Australia. We want to use this platform and take joy to the world, and we can do that through the magic of podcasting, content on demand, and by donating to Joy and by becoming a member. That is one of the things that you're helping to do, not just to keep Joy out loud and proud here in Melbourne, but to take joy to the world. And I think that's a really pretty special thing.
Great. And just finally, I guess, for people, I mean, there'll be people that can renew their membership, obviously, but for people that are new, that don't necessarily have a membership, so they just head to the Joy website to do all those things.
Yeah So head to joy.org.au, and don't forget to do it before June 30, and you go into the prize to win, or you go into the running to win all these amazing prizes, and that's pretty cool.
Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us, Chris, Program Director of Joy.
Extraordinaire.
Sorry.
It's been mandated now. To call them Ash. Well, that is it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back on Monday at 6:30 to bring you the day's big news.
We'd like to thank tonight's guest, Tina and Renee Dixon, and the Chicks Talking Footy team, and we'd like to extend our thanks to The Informer team, including our panellist, Chris Tate, for putting together tonight's show. My name is Matthew Wade.
And I'm Alana Schatzer.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.